morning, my friends, and welcome to yet another incredible installment of the program. From very high above all the puerile and vacuous forms of Wyoming mainstream media, this is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, firmly ensconced behind the silver Cowboy State Politics microphone and broadcasting to you from the base of the Bighorns at the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to the program. Happy Wednesday. Every time that I finish a program, I almost immediately start looking for whatever I'm going to talk about on the next program. It's probably hard for a lot of you to imagine, but it takes a lot of preparation to put Cowboy State Politics together. You might think that I just sit down behind the microphone and start talking, and while I do appreciate the vote of confidence, that's not exactly how things work around here. I'll admit that there are times that I'm just fired up and I have to talk to somebody, and you, my friends, are on the top of that list. A lot of times, this happens right after I read a column by our pal Rod Miller. But more often than not, I've researched a topic for weeks, if not months, waiting for the precise moment to talk to you about it. I sit back and I try to figure out when something will have the most meaning for you. I try to figure out when something will make you get up off the couch, walk out the front door, go to a legislative meeting and testify about it, or show up at a public meeting and tell the crappy BLM that they're out of their friggin' minds. But my friends, just doing that is not enough. You have to be informed about what's going on, hence all of the research that I put into giving you the Cowboy State Politics program every week, so that you can make the argument yourself. Because I promise you, if you stand up in a meeting and say, "Because David said so," they'll probably throw you out of the room, or at the very least, laugh at you so much that you'll leave on your own accord. That's why I have the website, cowboystatepolitics.com, so that you can do your own research. I don't have any problem pointing you in the right direction, but I want you to know the facts for yourself. Well, that and the other obvious reason why I have my own website, self-aggrandizement, of course. But my point this morning, at least in this segment of the program, is there are a lot of topics that have been brewing for a very long time. And I haven't talked about them because, like I said, I've been waiting for the right moment to tell you about them. Imagine, if you will, that I had the program, this program, Cowboy State Politics, 11 years ago, when then President Obama said this in Virginia.
Somebody invested in roads and bridges. If you got a business, that you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
Every time I hear that thing, it feels like my head is going to explode into a million pieces. Did you hear the crowd at the end? Yeah, you didn't build that business. That's somebody else. You don't deserve that money. Well, the funny thing about that is I was actually at that rally. My boss at the time, I worked for a big construction company, and my boss was this big-time Democrat in Virginia. And he asked me one day, "Hey, do you want to go see the president speak?" To which I said, really? Obama? And he's like, "Come on, it's the president." To which I replied, "All right, okay, even though it's Barack Obama, I guess it would be kind of cool to go see him." Afterwards, you talk about being absolutely torqued off for the next month. Anyway, why bring that up now? Why, after 11 years, do I want to reopen old wounds? Because, my friends, nothing with the left happens in a vacuum. There's nothing they do that is just something they woke up in the morning and said, "Hey, I think it'd be great to take 3.1 million acres from Wyoming and completely shut it off from public use." They don't work that way. Everything is on a plan. Everything has an agenda. And usually it's one that's been planned for a very long time. And I have to tell you, I see an agenda everywhere I look. When you read as much and watch things as closely as I do, it becomes very, very clear what they're doing. And none of it is by happenstance. You have to listen to what they say. Most of the time, the left tells you exactly what they're doing. Because words mean things. Take them at their word. They're telling you exactly what they're going to do. We all just have to be paying close enough attention to hear it. Let me give you another one. Remember this?
And Barack knows that we are going to have to make sacrifices. We are going to have to change our conversation. We're going to have to change our traditions, our history. We're going to have to move into a different place.
After that, like a vapor, she was gone from the campaign trail. Why, you might ask? Because at the time, it was too much. Now, look at the world we live in now and ask yourself if she wasn't telling you exactly what the plan was. We're going to have to change our history, our traditions. We're going to have to move to a different place. Are we not now in a very different place than we were 10 years ago? Or 15, when that recording was made? We're going to have to change our history. The 1619 Project. That thing is almost entirely fabricated, or at the very least, the facts are twisted to fit an agenda. America was a racist country, and it was from the very beginning, or so the New York Times says. I suppose you could chalk it all up to coincidence, but there again, I don't believe in coincidences. In fact, a very good friend of mine a long time ago told me that, David, in politics, there are no coincidences, and there aren't here. So what the heck was Michelle Obama really talking about? Obviously, she was saying we're going to have to change history, we're going to have to change our conversations, and all of that. But what was the deeper meaning behind it? What was she trying to convey to the audience? Collectivism. We are going to have to change our history. We are going to have to change our conversations. And don't forget this whole part.
And Barack knows that we are going to have to make sacrifices.
Oh, sacrifices. That's the one that relates specifically to the state of Wyoming. We are going to have to make sacrifices. You see, we're all in this together, and we all have to do our part and pay our fair share. That way we can all prosper together. What does that sound like? I'm sure everyone remembers this old classic.
We've got to get back to, you know, my belief it takes a village. And it takes a village to handle with care our own children and other children who are vulnerable and at risk.
No, it's not your belief. It belongs to somebody who's a heck of a lot older. And just think about the liberals in Wyoming. Well, of course, I'm talking about the redcoats, because most people that get elected, well, they have to sign up as Republicans so that we'll vote for them. How many times have they tried Medicaid expansion? By my count, in the last 4 years, it's been 13 times, and they'll probably try it again in the upcoming budget session. And every argument they use for it is, we have to protect the vulnerable, the indigent, the children, we have to take care of them. All the while, they don't want you to pay any attention to the systems we already have in place to help those very people. They just want to make it bigger. They want more money and bigger government to fund their collectivist approach to government. The point I'm getting at is that none of this is out of the blue, and neither is the BLM's plan to restrict over 3 million acres of Wyoming to pretty much no human use whatsoever. If you read it, and I didn't read all of it, it's over 600 pages, but in the first few pages, they flat tell you that it all started in 2012. Well, who was the president in 2012, and who would have directed government agencies to look over their land use policies? Barack Obama, of course. Listen to this. This is from 2008, during the transition.
All of you have shown true leadership in the fight to combat global warming. And we've also seen a number of businesses doing their part by investing in clean energy technologies. But too often, Washington has failed to show the same kind of leadership. That will change when I take office. My presidency will mark a new chapter in America's leadership on climate change that will strengthen our security and create millions of new jobs in the process. That will start with a federal cap and trade system. We'll establish strong annual targets that set us on a course to reduce emissions to their 1990 levels by 2020 and reduce them an additional 80% by 2050. Further, we'll invest $15 billion each year to catalyze private sector efforts to build a clean energy future. We'll invest in solar power, wind power, and next generation biofuels. We'll tap nuclear power while making sure it's safe, and we will develop clean coal technologies. This investment will not only help us reduce our dependence on foreign oil, making the United States more secure, and it will not only help us bring about a clean energy future, saving the planet, it will also help us transform our industries and steer our country out of this economic crisis by generating 5 million new green jobs that pay well and can't be outsourced.
First of all, did you notice that little slip in the beginning? Global warming, climate change. Words were changing so fast at that time, not even Obama could keep them straight. So, cap and trade. But that died, didn't it? Everybody remembers the Joe Manchin commercial where he's shooting the cap and trade bill. The truth is that that specific bill died, but not the whole idea of cap and trade. See, they always change the name so you think it's something new, but their eventual goal never really does change. They just bob and weave and take detours and move around stuff. All the while, we think that they're moving on. They're not, and they never have. Now, I'm not saying that these emissions are good or bad or otherwise. Every single moment of your life, you're emitting CO2. It's called breathing. Further evidence that this whole cap-and-trade thing was bullcrap from the very beginning. But everything produces emissions, and Obama's idea is we would put a cap on that, and then if you needed more, well, then you would have to pay for it. That's the trade part. Keep in mind that the people that are behind this whole scheme are the same folks that would drive by the Dave Johnston power plant and see all of the steam coming out of the towers and assume that that's really nasty emissions, when in reality it's not. So anyway, the cap-and-trade bill died. And we conservatives did exactly what conservatives always do. We have a win, and then we take a break and sit down and assume that the other side isn't going to try it again. I'll tell you where all this is headed, as if I need to, in just a second. But first, an absolutely outrageous profit timeout. Cowboy State Politics is brought to you by Morton Buildings. If you're in the market for an outbuilding or a garage or a barn or a roping arena or maybe a giant warehouse for your business, the two guys you need to talk to are Nick and Jesse at Morton Buildings. Their phone number is 307-674-2532. They're the experts in metal building construction. They've been doing it longer than anybody else around, and they definitely do a much better job than anybody else. So it doesn't matter what building you've been thinking about, give Nick and Jesse a call. Again, their phone number is 307-674-2532, or you can check them out on their website at mortonbuildings.com. Gunrunner Auctions is one of the nation's leading online firearms auction houses, and they're celebrating their 25th year. Scott Weber, the owner, specializes in estate firearms. First thing he does is he goes to an estate and appraises the firearms for the heirs, and then he takes them to his Cody auction facility, where he and his team research them, sometimes getting factory letters from the Cody Museum about each firearm's history. And then every month, beginning on the 7th, they post 500 fine firearms for sale. All of the auctions start at $20 and there's no reserve. So if you're looking for a gun, or maybe you don't know that you are and you just want to find something special, or if you've been looking for some hard-to-find ammunition, go to GunrunnerAuctions.com and you'll probably find it. One more time, the website is GunrunnerAuctions.com. And now, back to the program. So cap and trade was 2008-2009. Here's Barack Obama from 2012. Uh-huh, the same year that the BLM is referencing in their RMP report.
Energy policy is creating jobs and leading to a cleaner, safer planet. Over the past 8 years, the United States has reduced our total carbon pollution more than any other nation on Earth. But we have to act with more urgency.
Because the changing climate is already harming Western communities struggling with drought and coastal cities dealing with floods. That's why I directed my administration to work with states, utilities, and others to set new standards on the amount of carbon pollution our power plants are allowed to dump into the air. The shift to a cleaner energy economy won't happen overnight, and it will require some tough choices along the way.
Tough choices. Yeah, I get it. Now, those wouldn't be those sacrifices that Michelle Obama was talking about in 2007, would it? I don't know. Seems awfully coincidental. And it sounds a heck of a lot like that little YouTube video from 2008 before he took office. But there was something at the beginning of that soundbite that's really important. Oh, by the way, that one was from a State of the Union address in 2012. Let me play it for you again.
But we have to act with more urgency because the changing climate is already harming Western communities struggling with drought and coastal cities dealing with floods.
Yeah, sounds pretty dire, doesn't it? It's true, we have had a drought for a while, but not this year. Nope, I've had all the rain that I can handle right about now. And then, at the end of that soundbite, he tells you exactly what he's going to do, or at that time, what he had already done.
That's why I directed my administration to work with states, utilities, and others to set new standards on the amount of carbon pollution our power plants are allowed to dump into the air.
States and other agencies. That wouldn't be the BLM, would it? Yep, sure was. Now, to figure all of this out, you have to go to the draft EIS document that was prepared by the Rock Springs Field Office of the Bureau of Land Management. EIS stands for Environmental Impact Statement. At a recent online town hall, State Representative John Baer laid out exactly what the BLM is proposing. There are four different proposals listed in the Environmental Impact Statement. Only one of them makes sense, which is do nothing and leave things the way that they are, which, of course, they're not going to do that, and the others are increasingly more onerous. Here's what John Baer had to say.
So everybody, what has happened is the Ag Committee had a meeting over in Pinedale 2 weeks ago, and during that meeting, the BLM came and testified. They have been working for 12 years on a resource management plan for the Southwest area, and they had four plans, A, B, C, and D. Now, plan A was simply to leave things the way they are, ranchers ranching and using the land for grazing, hunters and recreators using the land as they saw fit through the roads that are available to get to those places where they wanted to recreate. And we were using the land and are using the land for Trona development, oil and gas and coal as well. Now, what plan B is basically restricting that completely away to almost no human use whatsoever. And the way that would be done is they would lease the land to conservation groups. They would pay the lease that a rancher would pay for grazing on the land, and then the land would be laid fallow. They're expecting in that condition to not use any lethal killing of predators. So predators are going to promulgate. They don't want prairie dogs killed. They don't want weeds controlled. And so you can imagine this is going to go to some very wealthy people who are then going to use the land as a offset, a credit for carbon expenditures elsewhere so they can fly their jets across country. Now, plan C is kind of a middle of the road, and plan D was one that was closer to plan A, just with a few more restrictions. And so they were expecting that we would end up with plan C in the middle, but the Biden administration has said climate change is the number one priority. And so these land leases need to reflect their efforts to combat climate change. Therefore, plan B is the BLM's currently preferred plan. There is a 90-day comment period, which ends in the middle of November. Is that right? Is it November or December, Bill?
November 16th.
November 16th. So we're well on our way to this 90-day limit.
So that's what John Baer had to say. Allow me to quote page 8 of the Environmental Impact Statement. And I quote, BLM land within this planning effort will support guidance outlined in Executive Order 13990 on protecting public health and the environment and restoring science to tackle the climate crisis. EO 13990 establishes an administration policy to listen to science, improve public health, and protect our environment, ensure access to clean air and water and reduce greenhouse gas emissions, identify steps to accelerate responsible development of renewable energy on public lands, strengthen the government-to-government relationship with sovereign tribal nations, make investments to support the administration's goal of creating millions of family-supporting union jobs, bolster resilience to the impacts of climate change, and center equity and environmental justice. End quote. I can't believe they put that in an official document. What the heck is environmental justice? They don't know either. But the important part of that is Executive Order 13990. You see, the problem with all of these government documents is they are one giant rabbit trail, and they hope that you're not going to be wise enough to travel down it and figure out exactly what they're talking about. Well, Executive Order 13990 is the big, giant, sprawling executive order that Joe Biden signed on January 20th of 2021. That's the one that revoked the permit for the Keystone XL pipeline, but it did a whole bunch of other stuff. When you read through it, and it's not that tough of a read, it's just really, really long and really, really boring. But the bulk of it is revoking a lot of President Trump's executive orders, because one of the first things that President Trump did is he revoked a bunch of President Obama's executive orders. And so much of Executive Order 13990 reinstates what Obama put in place before he left office. I know, gets confusing. One of the things that it does is it sets up this environmental, and environmental is in quotation marks, working group. And let me just read to you from the executive order. Now, the mission and work of, and I'm quoting here, the mission and work of the working group shall, as appropriate and consistent with applicable law, be A, to publish an interim, and there's a whole bunch of acronyms here, report within 30 days of the date of this order, which agencies shall use when monetizing the value of changes in greenhouse gas emissions resulting from regulations and other relevant agency actions until final values are published. Let me repeat that very important sentence. Quote, publish an interim, whole bunch of acronyms, report within 30 days of the date of this order, which agencies shall use when monetizing the value of changes in greenhouse gas emissions. End quote. Monetizing. That means to put a dollar amount on it. But I thought that whole cap and trade thing was dead. Anyway, back to the executive order. Now, B, C, and D of that list are just reports that they're going to provide to the president. But subsection E is pretty important. Read this. Quote, provide recommendations to be published with the final acronyms under subparagraph A, if feasible, and if in any event, by no later than June 1st of 2022, to revise methodologies for the acronyms, and to the extent that current methodologies do not adequately take into account climate risk, environmental justice, and intergenerational equity. End quote. Whatever the heck those things mean. This next part, you're absolutely going to love. This is why they're doing all of this, the 600-page environmental impact statement and Executive Order 13990, Section 5, and I quote, accounting for the benefits of reducing climate pollution. This is fabulous. It is essential, quote, it is essential that agencies capture the full costs of greenhouse gas emissions and accurately as possible, including by taking global damages into account. Doing so facilitates sound decision-making, recognizing the breadth of climate impacts, and supports the international leadership of the United States on climate issues. the, quote, social cost of carbon, end quote. The social cost of nitrous oxide and the social cost of methane are estimates of the monetized damages associated with incremental increases in greenhouse gas emissions. They are intended to include changes in net agricultural productivity. Yeah, that would be cows. Human health, property damage from increased flood risk, and the value of ecosystem services. The accurate social cost is essential for agencies to accurately determine the social benefits of reducing greenhouse gas emissions when conducting cost-benefit analyses of regulatory and other actions. End quote. It's all about money. I don't really need to tell you this, but none of it has to do with the environment at all. It is that same cap and trade thing that Obama was talking about in 2012. It's the same thing that Michelle Obama was talking about, making some sacrifices. All of it is money. And the reason why they're locking away 3.1 or 3.7 million acres or whatever the number is so that they can use the decreased production on those federal lands in their cap and trade system. It's going to drive up the costs of everything that we produce. And you are going to pay for it. Well, I'll pay for it too. We're all going to pay for it because we don't have the acreage necessary to produce the goods that the marketplace is going to require. And they're going to use that 3 million plus acreage to offset whatever carbon emissions they've accumulated elsewhere. You can't just look at this thing locally or nationally. The Executive Order 13990 says global impacts. And the same thing is mentioned in the EIS report that was put out by the Rock Springs Field Office. The amazing thing about all of this is that it was the Rock Springs Field Office itself that compiled this 600-page report. People that live in Wyoming. Now, there's no doubt if you work at the BLM, more than likely you're probably one of the lefties. Not saying all. I know a lot of people that work at the BLM that are straight-up conservatives. But most are probably not. You live and work in an environment that is dominated by federal policy. You look at these things that are given to you, and you just have to go along with them because that's your job. Take, for example, archaeological surveys. When I was working in the oil and gas industry, when you'd permit another project, you'd have to do this archaeological survey. And whatever they found on your piece of property, arrowheads or chips or whatever other artifacts they would find, they would leave them in place. Now, arrowhead hunters, they would watch these different projects and see where the archaeologists were looking at. Because at one point, they would have to map them out. And so there would be this little pin flag sitting there for a little bit. And it would tell these folks where to go pick up the arrowheads at. Now, you would think if you wanted to preserve those archaeological artifacts, that you'd put them in a museum so that they don't fall into some sort of private hands or something. But nope, they were left right there on the ground. Now, I guarantee if you go back to most of these projects, whatever was on the ground during the archaeological survey is no longer there anymore. My point in bringing all of this up is that it absolutely makes no sense. Frankly, most of what the Bureau of Land Management does doesn't make any sense. Don't get me going on sage grouse. So when you look at all these federal policies, executive orders, mandates, whatever it is that they're calling it that day, you have to look at the underlying purpose. Rarely do they come out and say it. Instead, they use gobbledygook like environmental justice and intergenerational equity. And when you get down to it, all of it really boils down to money. But it's not money for you, nor is it money for me or anybody that you know. It's money for very, very rich people that are engaged in this cap-and-trade green energy idea. It doesn't have anything to do with the environment. So when you're making arguments in front of one of these BLM panels, they're holding a meeting today, I think, your arguments are not going to hit home if it's all about how environmentally friendly coal mining is or how great the Trona industry does at reclamation. None of those arguments hit home because they don't attack the real purpose behind this environmental impact statement.
What you should do instead is read passages from Executive Order 13990 to the panel and ask them to explain it, because that's the very thing they cite as the reason why they developed this whole plan in the very beginning. I guarantee you that none of those people can give you a definition of what is environmental justice or intergenerational equity, because there is no definition to it. I've posted links to both the EIS statement, the Environmental Impact Statement, and Executive Order 13990 on the website, Cowboy State Politics. Well, that'll do it for today's installment of the program. If you haven't bought your tickets to the Independence Network launch party, you need to make sure you do that quick. They're $50 for one or $500 for a table. I'm telling you, it is going to be a show that you definitely don't want to miss. To get your tickets, go to independencenetwork.us. There's a link right at the top that'll take you to the ticket site. Trust me, you don't want to miss this one. If you haven't done so already, make sure that you sign up for the Cowboy State Politics mailing list. To do that, go to the website, scroll all the way to the bottom, and there's a little form there where you put your name and your email address in. I missed the newsletter last week because I was hanging out with our pal Chad Prather, but this week we're going to hit it again, and we're going to continue that each and every week so you know exactly what's going on with the program. Also, make sure that you follow and subscribe to the program. You can also do that at the website, right in the little podcast link. There's little icons right up in the upper right-hand corner, or you can do that from the Podbean site. Either one of them will work. Have a good rest of your week, and we'll talk again tomorrow during the live program. You can find the link to the show at the website, cowboystatepolitics.com, or you can find it on the Facebook page. But for now, from the base of the Bighorns, at the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming, I'm David Iverson, and this is the one and only Cowboy State Politics.